CJSF 90.1 FM, and we hope you have a great holiday season.
Welcome to Teachings in the Air, an Indigenous health and wellness podcast that's meant for everyone, all of our friends and relatives. I am your host, Sahilthit, a.k.a. Jerry Oldman. This is Teachings in the Air with Sahilthit. Today's podcast is called Roadman. You know, I became a roadman, jeepers, when was that, 1979? The way they describe a roadman, and I was I guess you could say a new age roadman, because I heard about people called roadman and they traveled to do ceremonies. There were people traveling to the West Coast from South Dakota, roadmen, coming to do ceremony. And they would just come and show up and offer ceremony, and they travel wherever they're asked to do ceremony. Roadmen. So I became a roadman around doing workshops and conferences. So I followed that model, and they'd ask me what I want. And I said, whatever you can give me, and I'll come. But I didn't do that until after Auntie Dorothy from Bella Bella called me up one day, and we trained together in 1976 in Nietzsche to be addictions counselors. Oh, she was a wonderful auntie to me. Laughing, you know, was good sense of humor, very sincere in helping the people, you know, good people at Auntie Dorothy. One day I was working in my community and I get this phone call. Jerry Oldman. And I recognize her name. Auntie Dorothy, what's up? And she says, Jerry Oldman, you get on that train where you live. It used to be the BC Rail. You get on that train and you go to North Vancouver and you go to this hotel. I got a room paid for you already. Then the next day you go to the South Terminal at the airport. And we have a ticket for you there. They're going to fly you to Bella Bella. And I said, for what, Auntie? And she says, you're going to do a workshop on addictions. Because the one I hired can't make it. I said, Auntie, I've never facilitated a workshop before. She says, never mind. I know you can do it. You know. So I done what Auntie said. I was trained to listen to elders, and she's a beautiful elder. And I jumped on the train the next day, went to North Vancouver, took a taxi to this hotel. I can't remember what it was. Went to a South Terminal. I'd never been there before. Went to the ticket person on the Coastal Air or whatever it was, and I said, Jerry Oldman? And, oh, yeah, well, here's your ticket. Next thing you know, I'm in Bella Bella, you know, doing a workshop on addictions. Auntie Dorothy meets me at the, you know, have to land on the ocean down at the dock. Oh, good to see you, Jerry. I'm glad you come. And she says, come on, we're going to go get you on a radio. They had a community radio, and I'd never been on radio. And I said, what do you want me to say, Auntie? Well, tell him you're here to do a workshop. Tell him your name. And so I said, oh, okay, how about if I do a song too, Auntie? And she said, yeah, that's even better. Because I always carried a hand drum after I sobered up. It was a habit of mine. Because music is medicine to me. So we get into this little studio and I introduce myself. And tell them that I know Auntie Dorothy, and she asked me to do a workshop about alcohol and drugs. And I sang a song, and it was a gambling song. And I said, so you take a gamble and come to the workshop. You never know what's going to happen. Even though at that time I didn't know what I was going to do. I'm honest here. You know, I was very afraid. So that night where she put me up, I wrote out my workshop because she told me the different people I was going to speak to, staff, students, you know, community workshop. And so I was copying my heroes that I wanted to be like around workshopping, and there were indigenous people from an institute called Nietzsche Institute. And Nietzsche in Cree, I think it means my friend or my brother or my sister. So I'd seen these young indigenous men and women, some of them with braids, and they're carrying around sweet grass, and one of them had a pipe, and they're singing, and they're facilitating workshops on addictions. And I wanted to be like them. I said, I want to do that. I want to be like them. Never thinking I have to go to school somewhere to do that. But no, Auntie Dorothy just dragged me in and threw me to the wolves. But I done it. And she was ever so grateful. And at that time, you know, consultants were getting, you know, $250 a day. But I told Auntie, you don't have to pay me, Auntie. You know, you asked me to come, I come. Oh, no, nephew, you know, she said she'd give me an envelope, you know. And I look at it as a check. And I said, really, Auntie? And she says, yeah, that's what I was going to give the other guy, so I'll give it to you. I don't know how right that was, but I got it anyway, but I was shocked. Then there were people there from community on Vancouver, Northern Vancouver Island, and their alcohol and drug counselor says, I want you to come to our community. We're relocated from the mainland to the island, and we've been having troubles ever since. So adopting that roadman, you know, I don't even know what to call it, their law or their policy. When people call you, if you say yes, don't say no. When people are looking for help. So I'd done that, so that was my second workshop that I ever done in my life, you know. And I incorporated as a sharing circles, because that's what I seen in my vision quest, to sit in the sharing circle with my hand drum and speak to the people and get them to speak to me. That was my simple model that I was going by. But I would have them talk about their proudest moment, what they're afraid of, you know, what their dream is for their family, you know, or draw pictures of that and talk about it. And they seemed to like my style of what I was doing. So, of course, word spreads that Jerry Oldman is a facilitator, you know, and I never dreamt that I would be that fast. So I started traveling around BC, being called here and there to do. You know, I've been all over BC, Tunukak and Basket people, you know, way down the southwest corner of BC. You know, the Shuswapmuk people, Haida, Carriers, Nuchanath, Kwagyuk, Chilcotins, you know, all over the province I traveled. Doing workshops, I became a roadman. They'd call and I'd say, okay, when you want me to be there? And they'd all say, what do you want? I said, well, you just give me what you want, I don't have a rate. So I got known and I traveled around, and I remember one of the other facilitators saying to me, because I'd meet them, we'd be at a conference and we'd be all there, and they said, Jerry, you're wrecking it for us. What do you mean? Well, you're taking whatever they give you. You know, and we got a rate. You know, and I said, oh, I didn't plan that. That's just the way I am. It's a cultural way. You know, so I just stayed that way. Everywhere I've traveled. So I travel, you know, doing addictions workshops, personal growth and development, suicide prevention, family violence, you know, and I was out there doing those workshops. Cultural awareness was my favorite, and personal growth. And people would start calling me, and I became a roadman. Oh, I have many stories about being a roadman. I was called to this isolated community and flew in and landed in the lake. That's the only way to get there. I flew in to do a four-day workshop on addictions. And I've been hearing this wherever I go. This one man came and he listened to me the first evening. They usually have a feast and introduced me to the community. He came in and he heard me and he kept coming. At the end of the 4 days, he said, you know, I could listen to you talk every day. It's because I tell stories and I laugh and I cry. You know, I just be myself. And I was going to fly out that Friday. This is, I think it's in December. No, it is November. And it snowed and the plane couldn't come in. And I wanted to go home and I was going to go by train from Prince George. And the guy says, oh, don't worry, we'll get you to PG. I said, oh, okay. So told me to get my bags and we went down the lake and there's a motorboat there with people in it. So I get in and we're chugging along the lake, you know, and there's a little snow coming down. And gee, we came upon this little cabin by the lake. And there's a granny there. She had an albino marten. She says, I just caught this. And she was skinning it. And she had two grandchildren with her. One was, the boy was packing wood. And the girl was washing clothes in the scrub board. And they all looked so happy and healthy. She fed us, you know, gave us tea and food. And we carried on to the end of the lake, and there's this truck, pickup truck. You know, and it's got a flat tire. I says, oh, geez. He said, don't worry. And he opened up the front of the car, and he got out this little thing, and he hooks it up to where the spark plug is and turns on the engine and pumps the tire up. He says, we'll be okay. And then there was a mother and, I know, four kids in the boat with us, and he throws me a skidoo suit, you know, the kind you zip up, covers your whole body. He says, you're in the back of the truck. The mother's taking their kids for medical. So there I was laying in the back of a truck in the winter time, going to PG. But I didn't take it wrong. I think that's the way road men are. You know, we just accept. And I was happy to get to PG. They had a nice room for me there, and I caught the train the next morning. You know, I have so many stories about being a road man because I spent so many nights in motels, hotels, medical centers, staying with people because there's no hotel or anything. It's isolated, you know. But they all treated me good. They all appreciated that I come in, you know, and to do these workshops. And many of them I go to and they tease me and they say, maybe the planes aren't flying. You have to stay with us for a week maybe. And they were just teasing me. But it's reality. Some of them are like that. I flew into this one community and they had a feast night before I was to start. And so I sing songs. And the one that hired me, her grandmother, was talking to her and she only spoke her language. And the granddaughter comes to me and says, my grandmother says you're eating dinner at her house every day, but you have to sing. Okay. So I go see this granny after a workshop. Oh, traditional food. One night it was all crabs, you know, and good food. Oh, my gosh. But she loved my music, the hand drum. And she treated me so good. I remember, and I was leaving and going to fly out, and she told her, talking to her granddaughter. It just touches me till today. And she says, tell him I'm poor now because you're leaving. Oh, granny, I said, if I wasn't married and had kids, I would have stayed with them. You know, it was. So I've had many blessings in communities, but I've also seen the pain and suffering from addictions and violence in our communities, in every community. No community is immune from this. As a road man, I get called in to work with murder-suicide. And I'd go in and I'd follow the teaching. Jerry, you're expected to go there to do your best. So I go do my best. My thing was always to be positive and to be supportive. And in those days, early days, you know, I used to take vitamin B and C, mega doses of vitamin C, because I was told it helped me with my stress. I remember I'd take them, I'd get up early in the morning and I'd have these vitamins and I'd take them and I'd look myself in the mirror and I say, Jerry, you're a facilitator now. Nothing else, you're a facilitator, which means you're going to make it easy for them to talk about their pain or their addiction or whatever's going on. You're not to tell them how to live. You're to get them to be able to talk about what's happening so they can say goodbye to it, so they can change. So I started doing that. And, you know, it was, I somehow, like I wasn't traumatized by it. It seemed like it'd get me stronger, you know, to hear the suffering and to be able to do something about it. I got called to this one community because they're worried that this brilliant young woman became suicidal. And she went out with her sister and her sister's husband, and they're partying, and she drove off the road, and her sister died. And I remember it was a two-day workshop, and there's 45 family members in the workshop. Grandparents, parents, uncles and aunties. You know, relations. And I remember as, you know, there are many times I've become concerned. I say, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? It's not enough time. Two-day workshop. But then I would, I guess you could say, not a guess, what I would do is I would ask for help. I'd ask for guidance, what to do. And this one, we had a sharing circle. I do presentations about grief and loss and about, you know, why we get into addictions and stuff. And I tell stories mainly about myself, how I got out of it. You know, and then I remember at the end we're going to have for the young lady. And I sat her down beside me and I talked to her. And she said, I told her, you know, I was up front. I said, they asked me to come here because they're afraid you might do something to yourself. And she says, I know. And so I said to everybody, if your spirit moves you, please come up and whisper in her ear encouraging, supportive words. Oh my gosh, everybody stood up in that hall and lined up and give her hugs and talk to her. At the end, they sat down and I went to her and she was weeping. I said, I can speak for you. No, 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 let me, she said, gave her some water and Kleenex, and she stood up and she said, I made a mistake. I made a mistake. I shouldn't have made that mistake because my nephew and my niece don't have a mom no more. And I didn't know what to do, and I know people thought that I was going to do something to myself. But I want to thank all of you for letting me know that you still like me. You don't have anything against me, feels like it, because you all talk to me. I thought you didn't like me anymore. That's my mind saying that. Blame me. So, as an example of me getting guidance from somewhere, I can't tell you where, what to do. But it happened. Oh, at the feast, there's laughter and sharing. There's one guy says, you know, I'm so glad my niece accepted to come to this workshop, this circle. He says, she taught me, because I never speak to people, but I come because I love my niece. And he says, my brother and I were fighting over alcohol, and there's a propane stove and or gas by the propane or something, and the gas flipped over and burnt his face. He says, I haven't looked at myself for many years. So it goes to show how we can role model for each other and let us know it's not too late. You know, so I've also been, you know, really lucky, and I'd see ceremony and be part of ceremony as a roadman. Other ceremonies besides the ones I do. And wonderful elders that never give up on the people, speaking or singing or doing ceremony or just being there as support, never giving up. I've probably seen that in every community. These ones, they're quiet, some of them, they don't say anything, but they're there. You know, and I got to really appreciate them. There was one, I went to this another isolated community, I could drive in. I remember I was driving in, it was wintertime, it was foggy. And I'd never been there before. And I'm driving really slow because I don't want to go off a road. And I'm wondering, I wonder if I made the wrong turn. Because I'm driving so slow and seems to be taking so long to get there. But I remember I see these lights in the fog. I says, oh. I get there and it's a hall. I arrived right at the hall and there's people waiting. Oh, there you are. They're saying, we're wondering if you're coming. And, oh, yeah, no, no. Once I say I'm coming, I'm going to come unless something happens. You're just in time. We got the food and we're going to have the feast. It was a feast for the night before the workshop starts. And so we have the feast and they wanted me to talk to the people about the workshop. So I got up there and I talked, sing a song and talk to them and tell them a bit about myself. And I told them that story I've told many times. I said, every day we wake up, we can change our mind. And I told them I woke up and quit drinking, quit drugging, quit swearing, you know, all the things I quit, I changed my mind about. You know, and then I told him one day I got up and washed the dishes, and was my wife ever happy, you know. And I remember third night of the workshop, the coordinator that hired me said, we're having a women's group tonight and they want you to come. I said, no, 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 it's a women's group. I really respect that. Oh, no, you're not going to stay. Somebody just wants to say something to you at the group. Oh, okay. So I went on there, and these women are sitting in a circle. So I sit there, and I'm waiting and wondering what's going to go on. And one of the women started crying. I says, "Oh, no, I'm in trouble." And somebody gave her water, and she takes a sip, and she looks at me. And she says, "I just wanted to thank you." "Oh, for what?" And she says, "My husband never goes to workshops, but he came to the feast because he likes the food. But after he heard you talk, he's washing the dishes." She was so happy that he's washing the dishes. Because I guess maybe she felt she was doing all the work. I don't know. I don't know the family. But she was so happy, you know. So I've seen change in many ways being a roadman. A song sometimes would lift people up. You know, stories would lift them up. Then when they have a chance to share, they start to free themselves to get rid of their anger, their fear, or their depression. And then I would see them support each other. You know, and I do the same thing with them. I tell them, whisper in their ear some encouraging words. I've done that so many times. And they would all do it. And sometimes I'd see the person they're whispering to start laughing and their shoulders are shaking. And sometimes they'd just hang on to each other. And sometimes they'd share tears. But it became real at that moment because I tell people, when you feel, you heal. You know, so don't hide your feelings. Don't swallow your pain, your anger, whatever. We need to rid ourselves of it, get it out of our system so we don't hurt people with it. And another workshop I went to is All Men, Father-Son workshop. Oh, that was one of the powerful ones. They're all powerful. But this one stands out because it was men. It's a father-son workshop. And they told me, I said, we're not going to hardly get anybody. Because I've been to communities and no men would show up. I got there, it was probably 30 men, fathers and sons, 15 fathers, 15 sons. I said, whoa. They said, yeah, but they're not all from this community. People heard about it from others and they come. I said, oh, good. And so we're having sharing circle. And message was for the sons to give their fathers a message. And then I said to myself, "Jerry, what are you thinking of?" Because this young man stood up and he was angry. His fist was clenched. And he's looking at his dad. He says, "I hate you. I thought many times when I grew up, I'm going to beat you up because of what you've done to my mom." He says, "But I've been going to residential workshops, so Dad, I understand you today. It took me a long time to forgive you, but I do now, because I understand." And I led him over to his father and said, "You can apologize or do whatever." And they sat together and they're holding each other. And as one of the, I guess, proudest moments I had for a father and a son. Because I know how hard it is to work out family issues. And the father talks about himself and the hurt he went through. And that's the first time I heard it's a reason, it's not an excuse for the way I am. "I'm sorry I hurt your mom." So that's one of the, I guess, as a road man to be part of, it strengthened me to see healing between a father and a son. You know. So that's all the stories. I got many stories about BC. Now I'm going to go head out of the province. because I started to get called to other places. I went to the Northwest Territories, you know, there was a terrible